Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. I am Louise McSharry, and this is the podcast that aims to keep you caught up in everything from news to the world of entertainment and just people who are doing and saying interesting things. And today's episode is the entertainment episode, and I have to say, I really, really, really enjoyed this chat this morning. So I hope you really enjoy it too. James O'Hagan is back, and he is always just an absolute pleasure. When I was sending him the list of stories for today, I was like, oh, they're a bit kind of fluffy, actually. There isn't a whole lot of meat to get into. And then when we started talking, we were like, okay, wow, actually, there's loads of meaty stuff to chat about. So I hope you really enjoy it. But before we get into that, I just wanted to, first of all, thank those of you who have joined the Patreon. Since I started doing the 3 episodes a week, lots more of you have signed up. And I really appreciate that, because it just genuinely feels like such a vote of confidence, and like you really value this work that I'm doing. And yeah, I love you. I don't want to be like a broken record, but I never want you to think that it doesn't or that it goes unnoticed, because I do very much appreciate that. Secondly, I wanted to remind you that I have a live show coming up, my friends. Yes, that's right. I'm going to be in the Laughter Lounge on May 9th. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's a Thursday night, and my friends and I were just discussing that Thursday is almost, like, technically, yeah, you've got work on Friday if you work on Monday to Friday, and I appreciate that not everybody does. But, like, you know, the next day is Saturday. So, like, you've really only got to get through the day, and you haven't wasted a weekend day, you know, being tired or hungover, whatever your flavor is. And I just think it's a great day to get the crew together and go and do something fun, maybe do something different, maybe come and see my live show. I think it's going to be really good. Myself and a couple of the crew from Catch Up are going to be doing a little thing. We're working on it at the moment. I think it's going to be really fun. And then also there will be a conversation with someone who I know you guys are going to absolutely love. I'll tell you more about that as things develop. But for now, that is the information that I can give to you. And the link, if you want to get tickets, is in the blurb. I would love to show you a good time. Please give me the chance. Otherwise, there's not a lot going on with me. I'm working away. I find with the new podcast format early in the week is very, very busy for me. And then I have a bit more time toward the end of the week, which is nice. I'm going to Manchester, actually, at the end of this week. My sister is getting married, and there's a designer whose stuff she likes that only has a shop in Manchester in London. So we're going to go over there, and she's going to try on some dresses, and it's going to be interesting, you know, family dynamics. I'll be very interested to see how it all goes, but I'm looking forward to it. And then other than that, I don't have huge plans for this weekend, but it's going to be nice. I've never been to Manchester before. Actually, if you have a restaurant recommendation, please feel free to send it to me, because we're going to need to have dinner on Friday. And my least favorite thing when you're somewhere else is when you end up wandering around like without any recommendation, and you look at a million restaurants and then you end up in one that's crap. And I really don't want that to happen. So I'd like to book somewhere. So if you have a recommendation, I would appreciate that. In terms of my recommendations, I have started watching Big Mood, Nicola Coughlan's new show. She stars in it with Lydia West, who I really, really like. She was in It's a Sin. That's where I kind of came to love her. And she's a great, great actor. And it's a really good show. I'm really enjoying it. It's very funny, but like a lot of Channel 4 dramas, there's a bit of meat to it as well. Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it. Only 6 episodes, so it's very handy. Episodes are about 25 minutes long, and they're all available if you want to watch them online on channel4.com at the moment. So there you go. Without further ado, let's get into the entertainment news this week. Okay, well, there are still small people in my house, so you may hear wailing and screaming in the background, but they will be gone soon. So I thought we would begin James O'Hagan and talk about this week's celebrity stories and the world of entertainment. And you were saying when we were planning this that you had watched Quiet on Set, the Nickelodeon documentary that we spoke about on the podcast last week. Where did you watch it? I didn't realize that it was available.
Well, first to say, with me in the podcast, you'll absolutely hear wailing and screaming.
Okay. So, the good kind. I like it.
The good kind. Yeah, so it's on Discovery Plus, which is available for everyone to access. I decided, because I'd just seen so much about it and like heard people talking about it, that I was like, I really wanted, and I like have a real memory of that period of time, that kind of, I was probably a little bit old for your Drake and Josh, your iCarly, but my brother was in that kind of thing, so I kind of passively consumed it. Yeah. And obviously had like a real love for the likes of, you know, Clarissa Explains It All and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. So I decided to go in and watch it. Discovery Plus, you pay your $4.99 and it is like, that's the only show of worth on it, literally.
Okay.
If you want to see what Fizz from Carnation Street made for her Christmas dinner in 2009, you can check that out. Or very like good. What the cake man thinks about, I don't know, social issues, you can probably find that. But yeah, it was a really intense 4 episode documentary. Talked about it already. I would say, like, you know, I don't know, like when I was going into watching it, I kind of was going in with sort of an edge of nostalgia, but then as you get into the issues, you really see, I suppose, like, it's very intense, and it stayed with me for a couple of days afterwards, kind of thinking about, particularly, I suppose, like, these are individuals I could relate to from being aware of them just in the general world, and then kind of having seen them at the time and knowing kind of like what was going on behind the scenes. It just adds this, like, it really just adds this real menace behind it. I think one of the things, like, it sort of, like, it's being obviously very much advertised as like this kind of Dan Schneider piece, but I'd say even more than that, it's probably just about how children are regarded within a media industry and how safety precautions are left out because people don't feel empowered to speak up for their own safety. And that's what really came through, because a lot of the worst stuff that was spoken about it wasn't really related to Dan Schneider. But as I was saying to you this morning, there's actually another episode of that show coming on the 7th of April, where I think they're going to be bringing together some of the people to sort of speak to the reaction that's come. And then also there's a few other people who I think perhaps prompted by or finally feeling safe as a result of kind of the response that was received now, kind of looking to speak out about their own experiences.
Wow.
And it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, you know, because I suppose the stuff that really has captured people's attention is the stuff around the sexual assault, particularly relating to Drake Bell. That storyline didn't really have anything to do with Dan Schneider, other than Dan Schneider created the toxic environment where someone could exist. That could happen. So I suppose it is that kind of, you know, I suppose it's slightly looking at it in a different direction. And interesting enough, that the individual who, and this is something that I think probably needs a bit more attention, is that the individual who sexually assaulted Drake had a number of very high profile celebrities write letters of endorsement for him, including James Marsden. And subsequent to getting out of prison, went on to work in Disney shows. So Disney children's. So it is a bit like, guys, this is gross. Can you let us know that you fixed this now?
Yeah. And it's bigger than Nickelodeon, and it's bigger than one person. Yeah. It's a culture, it seems like. Maybe for the next culture episode, actually, I might watch that full series and cover it here, or cover it on the Patreon, because it sounds like it's ongoing. As you say, there's new stuff to come. And thank God, because like this stuff has to come out. Like, it's, you know, I can only imagine the damage that it's done and is doing long term for people. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, looking back from like this vantage point at even just some of the more kind of lighter content within it, of like how the likes of Ariana Grande and the different female stars were kind of the positions they were putting in, the incredibly like overtly sexual positions that they were putting as children. It is gross.
Yes.
Like, just gross.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
really, really, really uncomfortable watching.
Okay, well, good. Good to hear from someone who's watched everything that's available. Now, there was another story that came up over the weekend, which is much less serious, that we thought we would flag, which is this ridiculous conversation about Easter and Trans Day of Visibility.
This is just my favorite sort of story, because it is like complete right-wing grifters totally exposing themselves as being completely idiotic. So, yes. As many people will know from being on social media over the weekend, Trans Day of Visibility happened on Sunday the 31st of April. It happens, or Sunday the 31st of March, it happens the 31st of March every year and has done since 2009. This year, as dictated by lunar arrangements, whatever they are, Jesus's Resurrection Day also happened on the 31st of March. And the right-wing kooks in America were not having it. Miss Caitlyn Jenner decided that she was having enough of it, released a tweet. I don't know if you release a tweet, but anyway, I am absolutely disgusted that Joe Biden has declared the most holy of holy days a self-proclaimed devout Catholic as Transgender Day of Visibility. Today is the only day we should be declaring as the day that he is risen. That was a very ropey sentence there, Caitlin. But there is also another individual tweeted, "We call on Joe Biden's failing campaign and White House to issue an apology to the millions of Catholics and Christians across America who believe tomorrow is one for celebration only of the resurrection of Jesus Christ." These people.
Like, do they not think for a second? Like, do they not for even a moment go, well, you know, maybe if Trans Day of Visibility is on the same day every year and Easter changes every year, it's not Trans Day of Visibility's problem that it occurs on this one day.
I have done the research now, and so next year Easter falls on Sunday the April 20th, which means that the individuals who were clutching their pearls this year at Trans Day of Visibility will be really getting their knickers in the twist, because not only is Sunday April 20th Pizza Delivery Driver Appreciation Day, National Lookalike Day, National Record Store Day, and National Cheddar Fries Day, it is, of course, 420.
420! Oh my God, of course! That is so funny. Oh, they will be horrified.
They will be horrified. And, you know, if any person was to look like someone who would enjoy a 420, I think Jesus on the cross, as depicted with his, like, you know, sickening locks and shaggy bob, is absolutely the sort of person you would put right in there watching Pizza Express with Seth Rogen. But yeah, so these people, they tell on themselves at every single opportunity that this is nothing to do with the actual celebration of religion. It is entirely about kind of finding a rod to beat marginalized communities with. That is all they care about. They've all, obviously, anyone who took part in this has revealed that they don't really pay any sort of attention to the God's calendar or whatever, because they would realize that, you know, Easter happens at different times every year and Trans Day Visibility happens on the same day every year.
What's wild to me is the journey of Caitlyn Jenner. Like, I mean, it's not that wild, I suppose, but, like, you know, Caitlyn Jenner has always been a conservative kind of Republican, but transitioning and then becoming kind of a trans icon for a little while and, like, claiming that she wanted to, like, raise, you know, awareness of trans issues and stuff to now this, like, it's the cognitive dissonance that must be necessary to kind of live as a trans woman and still be getting into these kinds of arguments is wild to me.
It really is. Like, you know, I think that obviously they've brought with them a huge amount of, like, I'm assuming, kind of internalized transphobia, internalized kind of, like, dislike for their own identity. I think that they obviously feel more comfortable within the sort of, you know, right-wing ecosphere, the Republican sphere, because that's where they've existed. And also, as someone who has pretty much, you know, for decades now, really just strove to be in the spotlight, you know, she has found a niche for herself where, you know, these people really want her to be there in order to kind of use as a
Point at her and go, well, she's trans, and she says,
exactly. It's like during the marriage equality referendum, where you had a number of gay men speaking out against gay marriage, and they were very useful to that cause at that time because it gave them sort of something. But they undoubtedly, you know, would have been completely like abandoned had there been anything come up that they actually needed from this group. So it is, you know, I bad Caitlyn Jenner has done as a trans icon, probably one of the most notable and well-known trans people on the face of the planet on one hand, but also just seems like a complete twat.
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it. Okay, let's move on to the other entertainment stories of the week. I think the main one is Beyonce released Cowboy Carter, her country album. Although even calling it a country album feels too narrow for me. Like, it does so much more than that, in my opinion. It's been interesting to see the responses.
Yeah, it has. And I think that this has been burbling along since Texas Hold'em came out. Like, there's been this kind of tension that seems to have existed between, I suppose, people questioning Beyoncé's legitimacy to enter this country space, people kind of, you know, bemoaning the fact that we're not going to be getting a Telephone 2.0 Gaga kind of style of pop thing. But yeah, so Cowboy Carter came out on Friday. It has gone on to be the 2024, it has broke the single day streaming record on Spotify for 2024. It has also broken several other streaming and sales numbers for a record. It was probably one of the most highly anticipated albums that has been released in an incredibly long time.
Absolutely.
It made Beyonce the first black woman to have topped both the hot country songs and the hot R&B hip hop songs since the list began in 1958. Featured a number of, like, you know, kind of iconic country artists in like a rather unique way. So you had Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton. I think people ahead of the times, I was certainly anticipating kind of like standard, like, you know, we're going to get like a duet of, you know, sort of an Islands in the Stream, if you will. But no, instead it was just Willie doing a little intro for Texas Hold'em and Dolly kind of giving her kind of permission to Beyonce to reimagine Jolene. Responses, I mean, I'm not the Beyonce stan in the room, so I might go over to you to go.
Yeah, I mean,
talk about that.
I would be lying if I said I wasn't at a birthday party at 2 a.m. on Friday night, like fully lecturing to young men. Not young men my age. No, they are younger than me. Young men on why they needed to respect this album. Yeah, like, I think it's been really interesting because I think what's happening is, And it's been interesting, I've had some people in my DMs even that I've had to like really take a deep breath in taking in what they have to say. I think there is a thing happening where there are Beyonce OG fans, right? People who love Destiny's Child and people who loved Beyonce's early music, which was very professional, very much playing the music game, who now are like, why can't she just keep doing that? Like, who just don't understand why we're not getting Telephone Part 2 or why she's not still making those kinds of songs, you know, absolute massive radio hits. And like, for me, Beyonce's career journey, from what I've seen, is she got to a point where she knew that everyone was listening, that she's one of the most powerful people in music, not just women in music, people in music, if not the most powerful person in music, actually, to be honest. Like, who's more powerful than her? And she got to the point where she had freedom, like artistic freedom. And she is an artist. She's not just a pop singer who, and people say, oh, she's got loads of writers on her songs. But that's because she credits everybody who has contributed any little bit to her songs. But like, you know, she is an artist and she earned herself artistic freedom. She got to the point where financially she could be artistically free. And in terms of her power and her influence, she could be artistically free. So Beyonce now can do whatever she wants. And she's been doing that on her last. It started with, I think it started with Formation, the song. I think that was her like making a decree that like Beyonce is not playing games anymore. Beyonce is going to do Beyonce. And Beyonce is very much going to make music for black people. And like, you know, that doesn't mean, by the way, that white people can't enjoy it or appreciate it. And it doesn't mean she's excluding white people. But it does mean that she's not kind of, you know, she would have had to be very careful in the early days of her career because of the culture of music and the culture of the country that she lived in, you know, and she would have had to be careful not to stray too far into blackness. Yeah. And I think Formation was very much saying, you know, that's not what I'm doing anymore. Lemonade was obviously an absolutely mind-blowing album that covered so many different genres. And then, you know, since then, Renaissance was very much about, you know, sending out a message of reclamation for house music and respecting, you know, the queer Black community that originated house music. And, you know, if you read some of the history of country music is an art form and a genre of music that was started by Black people in America and was very much appropriated by white people, you know, and then became a genre which was essentially owned by white people. And when Beyoncé performed with the Dixie Chicks at the Country Music Awards, she did the song Daddy Lessons, and the atmosphere was not pleasant.
No.
There was an attitude that she did not belong there, and the Dixie Chicks have spoken about it, and Beyoncé has actually referred to it herself when talking about this new album and the fact that she was made to feel very unwelcome. And so she felt like it was time for her to remind people that actually it was Black people, and particularly, you know, Black American people who had started this genre of music, and maybe it was time to take it back. So for me, that's a long introduction. But for me, yeah. I think there are people who don't know this context and who don't understand maybe why she's choosing to do what she's doing, for whom this doesn't make sense. And for those people, I feel like it's not for you, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be for you, because she's not pandering to anyone anymore. She's doing what she wants. She's making the artistic statements that she wants to make, and she doesn't really care if you don't get it. I think that's number one. And number two is she's also asking, and this comes through in her music all the time, she's thinking about her legacy and what impact she has on the world. She's written songs about this over and over and over again. And what she's choosing to do is not only remind people and empower Black people and remind people that, you know, African American people were at the root of so much important music, she's also choosing to platform people. So, for example, on Daddy Lessons, the banjo is being played by a woman called Rhiannon Giddens, who actually lives in Ireland, and she's married to an Irish guy. She lives in Ireland. She's an African-American banjo player. And she has been trying to kind of raise awareness of African-American banjo playing for a long, long time. And she gave an interview, I think it was about 5 years ago, where to Rolling Stone, where she said, they said, what's it going to take, do you think, for people to realize that, like, actually this originated as an African-American art form? And she said, you know, it's going to be something like Beyoncé, you know, having a Black banjo player on her song. And, you know, 5 years later, the first single that comes out from this album is Daddy Lessons with Rhiannon Giddens playing on it. You know, there's a Black country artist called Tanner Ardell who has a song called Buckle Bunny, which is brilliant. It's so good. And there's a lyric in it that says, looking like Beyoncé with a lasso, because she does kind of look like Beyoncé. And she's a country artist. And who is singing a verse on Beyoncé's cover of Blackbird? It's Tanner Adele. So now she's got that platform. Blackbird, by the way, is a song that was written by Paul McCartney about the Black women of Memphis who were fighting in the civil rights movement. So, like, nothing on this album is accidental or kind of unthought of. She is choosing to use her platform to platform other artists, you know, particularly African-American artists who need it. She is choosing to use her platform to raise the awareness of African-Americans' achievements. And she is also choosing to use her platform to make the art that she wants to make. She's thinking about her lasting impact. And no, that doesn't mean Telephone Part 2. And no, that doesn't mean that necessarily everybody's going to get it. But everybody doesn't have to get it. And I think that that's where I stand with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you used the word reclamation earlier when you were kind of talking. And I do think that kind of, since Lemonade, I think that absolutely has kind of been reclaiming her narrative, reclaiming her artistry, then has been moving on to, like, reclaiming or kind of, like, making people more. Because I do remember during the, like, when I felt very empowered on behalf of when Renaissance sort of was released, because I was like, this is amazing. It is, like, really spotlighting a community who have been sort of written out of this sort of space and giving them their power back. And it's the same again with this with Cowboy Carter, where I suppose it's kind of, as you said, it's kind of spotlighting the place of Black people within this tradition and sort of, like, reclaiming that space. So I do think, like, I've listened to the album and I've enjoyed it. As I said, I'm not a Beyoncé sort of, like, mega stan, but I certainly have enjoyed all of the content that she has released. And yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to, people have been talking about whether this will win album of the year at the VMAs or the EMAs or whatever one it is, or the Grammys, whatever. I think it absolutely could do. I think that it is something. It is interesting. It's different. It also is not what you'd necessarily expect from Beyonce circa 2000, but also very much what you'd expect from Beyonce circa 2024.
Absolutely. And like, it's a very long album. I know some of the criticisms have been, you know, so that Azealia Banks did a big rant, and Azealia Banks is an interesting character. I think she's incredibly musically talented. She's often wrong. She's sometimes right. No one reads a person like her. But one of the criticisms that she kind of went viral with her opinions on, and one of the criticisms was that the album is too long. And I think there could be an argument for that, but I also think that Beyonce just doesn't care. And there are, and you know, a friend, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine over the weekend, and I was like, there's so many good songs on the album that I love. Like, there might be one or two. I'm not finished. I haven't finished establishing my relationship with the album, so it's too soon for me to say, but like, you know, there's so much good stuff on there that I think almost the length of it makes people forget that there's so much good stuff on there. I know one of the other big things that Azealia Banks said was that in Beyonce's version of Jolene, like, you know, it's all about another woman wanting her man, and she was like, nobody wants Jay-Z's dusty crusty ass or whatever, something along those lines. And I'm like, that is hilarious to me because Jay-Z is a billionaire. Like, Donald Trump has women who want him. Do you know what I mean? Like, first of all, just from a money perspective, but also he's an incredibly accomplished, very cool man. Yes, there's some question marks around various things, but like, trust me, there are women who want him. And also,
there are many.
Can a singer not sing about something that isn't maybe her? Like, you wouldn't know. Like, maybe it's not even Jay-Z she's talking about. But anyway, sorry, this is too detailed.
on the like the album thing though, you know, we oftentimes will come back to a complaint about movies being too long at 3 hours, but the difference between an incredibly long album and an incredibly long film is that you can get up and press pause on your Spotify and walk away from it and come back to it. You don't have to listen to it all the way through. You can find the niche bits of it that you really love. I know that this album is, and I would say the last couple of Beyonce albums have been created to be listened to as like a
one piece,
a sort of a sonic story, but you don't have to. You're not obligated to do that every time you sit down. So I think the argument about the length, I do get it, but I also kind of like, you know, no one's forcing you to sit down in the room and listen to it.
Yeah, I will say I keep changing my mind about what, I mean, I don't think I'm going to have a favorite song, but the song that I'm listening to on repeat at the moment is Levi's Jeans, which is the song with Post Malone, which is not what I would have expected, but I keep coming back to it. It's like stuck in my head for days. And there was two different ones over the course of the weekend. So like, it, you know, it's that kind of album, I think, that you'll come back to and you'll listen to a certain song on repeat for a while and then you'll come back to it again. But like, again, it's not going to be for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't need to be.
Exactly.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Okay, we'll pause on that and move on to, I loved this story that came out a couple of weeks ago about Miriam Margulies, who is always funny.
She absolutely is. And to be fair, you know, she could be speaking about Beyonce albums in this too, maybe in some ways. We could all take it. So, Miriam Margulies gave an interview a couple of weeks ago where she said, I worry about Harry Potter fans because they should be over that by now. It was 25 years ago and it's for children. I think it's for children. Then she added that she gets asked to do cameos all the time where people are saying they're having a Beyonce themed wedding. And she just was like,
Harry Potter
themed
wedding.
It was like, what a frightful kind
I'm
of
not
idea.
Just being pernickety. It's just you said a Beyonce themed wedding and I find that very amusing.
I was like, in my mind, I said Harry Potter, but clearly I've been influenced.
Beyonce on the brain.
But no. Look, if you want to have a Beyonce themed wedding, go for it. But have a Harry Potter theme. And I think, gosh, what's their first night of fun going to be? I can't even think about it. And I think this struck a chord with a lot of people. A lot of people felt very judged by it. She then doubled down by it by saying it's a wonderful set of films. But if your balls have dropped, then it's time to forget about it. You know, go on to other things. It was 25 years ago. Grow up. And more recently, this week at the Dreamit Con, Jessie Cave, who played Lavender Brain in 3 of the films, said, it's such a shame that happened. She said, you know, it is. She's a bit funny like that. And I didn't think she mean for us to take it like that. I hope. I really don't like that she said that. But I do like that she said it.
I don't want to
yuck anyone's yums, but Harry Potter is something that as adults we need to get over.
I agree.
Very much. Something that needs to be, finish with it. You don't need like a Gryffindor robe as a person over 35.
I mean, that would be my position personally, but like, again, you do you, guys, like do what you want. But I think that the thing to consider with this, so this actor who said that, you know, she doesn't like that Miriam Margulies said it, is that, so her name is Jessie Cave. She played Lavender Brown. I have read all the Harry Potter books and seen all the films. I wouldn't be super into them now, obviously, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But at the time that they were coming out, I was definitely into them. And, you know, I don't remember this character. I had to Google, like, who she was. And, you know, she wasn't, like, one of the main characters. And the fact that this actor was at this conference, which obviously is a conference for these kinds of people, I feel like, you know, is an important piece of context. Because if you are an actor from Harry Potter who, you know, maybe isn't acting so much anymore, I'm going to look up her IMDb now, but you have a career based on having been in these films, then you very much rely on, you know, people still being into Harry Potter long into their adulthood. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. No, completely. And I thought about this when I thought about
although
this.
Although, actually,
like,
in fairness, she is still acting. So no disrespect. But still, if part of your career relies on it, then it's still valid.
Yeah, but this is no doubt a reliable paycheck. And indeed, you know, Miriam also, you know, she obviously is getting that cameo coin as well. And fair play to her. But I do think that, you know, I have like a more, not to go to like controversial corner, but like I do have a more kind of, I think that people on a progressive side of the room need to let Harry Potter go.
Yeah.
I think that it is beyond the point where art and artists cannot be separated. I have several gay friends who had Harry Potter themed elements to their wedding, and now they look back at those as queer people. They look back at those photographs and they're like, I can't enjoy this anymore. Which I do think is a real danger about bringing any kind of pop culture element into sort of, you know, a big event in your life. It's like, well, what happens if this?
Yeah,
ages,
well, it's the same with
like,
tattoos.
Milk.
Like, I have Miss Piggy tattooed on my arm. And I was like, I'm just pretty sure she's not going to get cancelled. But like, and I don't think this isn't out yet, but I actually have Dolly Parton on my other arm. And I don't think she's going to get cancelled either. Like, I have such faith in her. But you really do have to consider these things. You just don't know.
You do. I feel like with Miss Piggy and Dolly Parton, you're pretty safe.
I feel like it. They're my icons. Yeah. My icons through my whole life. Anyway, yeah, look, if you're mad at us for any of the things we've just said, sorry, it's just my opinion, to quote the Housewives. Okay, now this... I have feelings about this and I'm very interested. I feel like I'm saying loads of things that are going to piss people off today and
when you sent me this list of stories, I was like, oh, this is one for the extremes. This is not...
Okay.
This is not one for the center.
Okay, well, let's get into it, because Lizzo posted something on her Instagram and it's been framed in the media as her quitting music. I mean, tell the people.
Yeah. So, and you know, framed because she does finish off her post with "I quit." So, you know, there is kind of a, I suppose, that thing. So she obviously, Lizzo has been having difficulties over the last year. August of last year, a number of dancers on her tour accused her of sexual harassment, creating a hostile work environment, fat phobia, racial and religious harassment, and across the sort of duration of tours that went on between 2021 and 2023. Lizzo is, of course, also has been subject to mammoth abuse on social media.
Huge.
Because she is a fat black woman who chooses to operate in a way that is empowering and trying to create a world where people that look like her and are like her can be sort of celebrated. So on her Instagram last week, she had a post up that said, "I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and keep people happy and help the world to be a little better than I find it. But I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up against lies being told about me for clout and views, being the butt of the joke every single time because of how I looked. My character being picked apart by people who don't know me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this shit. I quit." Now, a number of weeks earlier, on the 17th of March, she had announced that new music was in the pipeline. She was getting ready for a big reemergence. Not clear what had happened in the sort of 2 weeks between that and then. But I also think that if you're living under the sort of pressure that Lizzo was clearly living under with all that is going on, I haven't seen any updates on where we are regarding the sexual harassment, hostile work environment case. So I don't know what's happening there. But I certainly know that Lizzo has been living under a very intense and unpleasant microscope for a very long time. And I would not be surprised if it is all just getting to the point where she's like, I cannot be bothered with this.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's where my opinion. She undoubtedly has been at the receiving end of a lot of shit. Like, you know, even if we put the legal case to one side, like, she has been at the receiving end to a lot of shit. And I definitely think that that would get to you in a big, big way. However, it is also kind of part of it. And at this stage of the game, you know what the story is. And I just personally feel like there are other ways to deal with that and manage that than, you know, coming on Instagram and kind of putting out a rant, but then continuing to post like promo stuff for your clothing brand over the following days. Because she's, you know, she has just 13 hours ago, she posted, you know, several photos for Yeti. And she posted a reel before that. So like, and I understand that people have contractual obligations and all the rest, but like, it just doesn't sit right with me. It feels a bit like a tantrum. And I'm not saying that the abuse that she has to put up with is okay. I don't think that it is. I think it's completely ridiculous that you can't just be a person in the world at these days, you know. And, you know, for her, the crime, you know, let's say aside from that legal case, the crime is essentially being unapologetically, you know, black and fat. And that shouldn't be something which brings kind of, you know, the kind of vitriol to your door that it has done for her and that it does for women all the time. But I still just think, like, come on, like, you know, it just doesn't sit right with me. I kind of feel like just be a bit more professional or something, or like, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like tantrum-y and like, look at me and like, feel sorry for me kind of vibes.
Yeah. And I definitely felt like something that I think I would imagine was, you know, typed out and sent within the space of maybe 45 seconds.
Exactly.
To be just like something, like something had like instantly happened. And like, you know, if we had some more mindful practice, you might have got some space in between the writing and the sending to decide that maybe this is something I need to write, but not something that I need to post, because we all have notes apps
absolutely
filled with like toxic content that we need to like get down somewhere, but not necessarily said. And you are right, it does come off as kind of tantrumy. I wasn't actually like, I hadn't brought into the fact that she would be posting other kind of branded content or on other accounts and like posting content for advertising or promotional stuff for her clothing brand. And that does make it feel a little bit, not necessarily insincere, but certainly very tantrumy. And I do think that Lizzo, while she has been undoubtedly kind of like subject to an enormous amount of very negative attention, she also had been like living in that kind of sweet spot of like huge adulation from
absolutely
like a corner of the internet.
Absolutely.
So she was like the internet's favorite person for several years. Mm. And I think that, you know, perhaps with the revelations around the like the hostile work environment in that particular case, suddenly the kind of like reliable source of positivity,
yeah,
and kind of like reassurance that came was no longer there. So it was kind of,
well, there's other, she's, you know, I think for a while, as is the way with this kind of fame, she was untouchable, she was, you know, perfect,
yeah,
everybody loved her. Obviously there were still fatphobic and racist people who didn't, but like I think the vast majority of people were really impressed by her music, is amazing. But then she did like branded content for Weight Watchers, and you know, people were really not happy about that, and the way that she managed,
yeah,
that actually wasn't great. That was when things started to turn for me. I was like, what,
yeah,
are you doing? And I think she just tends to kind of have a bit of a, oh, everybody's against me kind of thing, rather than sometimes actually listening to what people are saying, you know. But then again, I mean, what the fuck, what do I know? Like, I know, I've no idea. I don't know what's going on in her life. I don't know what the story is. But I just think I quit is so vague as well. Like, what does that mean? And I also kind of think if you were quitting, like if you were leaving the music business, if that was actually what was happening, are you staying in the clothing business? Because, you know, that's,
yeah,
not going to make things any easier. But also, if you were leaving any business, you know, as a very famous person for this reason, surely you would do it in a more considered way and, you know, really explain and make people realize that the culture is actually just so toxic that you can't possibly remain in it, rather than like a throwaway Instagram post. I don't know. I just don't really buy it. Like, that's me.
Yeah, listen, I think it comes off as being sort of a person having a tantrum, and I think it hasn't been handled. And I think that I would imagine that behind the scenes there are like 1,000 PR and comms people who are
in
associated
a blind
with
panic.
Her,
yeah,
in a blind panic, being, yeah, like, hey, do we spin this one out? So we'll see. Maybe we'll get new music, maybe we won't. Maybe she'll be the spokesperson for something and get cancelled, and anyone with a Lizzo tattoo will be like, well, fuck.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, we are all just human beings. And like, I think it's always important,
yes,
to kind of remember that in the context of any conversation about people, is that everybody, you know, we're all human beings, and maybe she regrets it, but it's still there. That's the thing for me. I kind of thought she'd delete it. You know, we're all just human beings doing our best. And even if you are super famous and super rich, you're probably going to have a moment every once in a while where you go, absolutely, mm-hmm, fuck that. So
yeah.
I'm totally up for forgiving her, but I just don't think it was the best move. Okay, let's move on. Billie Eilish is in trouble.
Listen, are we going to now get in trouble with this? Swifties as well, so alongside everyone else this week.
I hope not, because I'm not anti-Taylor Swift, but Billie Eilish is in trouble for some points she made about music releasing, specifically vinyl releases in the music industry.
Yeah, so speaking to Billboard about the idea of like sustainability in the music industry, her own sort of like, I suppose, ideas and ideals when it comes to environmentalism and like building a more sustainable and more sort of equal, sort of equally accessible kind of industry for everyone. She said, the biggest artists in the world making fucking 40 different vinyl packages that have different unique things just to get you up there buying more. It's so wasteful, and it's irritating to me that while we're still at a point where you can care that much about your numbers and you can care that much about making money, and it's your favorite artist doing that shit. And she spoke about her own merch research in this article to say that it's all ethically sourced and made with good materials and very sustainable, and that she's reduced the number of drops that she's had and trying to make things more universally accessible. Like, I read the article with Billboard. It's a bit dull, but it's basically all about kind of the need for, you know, more sustainability in music and how the music industry isn't making good on the need to be sort of more universally better for the planet. Now, yeah. Swifties have taken that particular quote, the biggest artist in the world making 40 different vinyl packages, and have assumed that that is directed at Miss Taylor Swift, who enjoys very complicated Easter eggs, likes to have about a million different versions of everything, you know. And, you know, there's arguments being made that it is for the artistry of it, because she likes to have, like, complete thing. Or, you know, there could just be that she wants to, you know, get as many sales as possible. So Billie has been being attacked on X by Swifties, who are fuming that they would suggest that Taylor Swift is anything less than absolutely perfect. And they have been dragging Miss Billie Eilish about Taylor's superior sales compared to her own album sales, and has been sort of, I suppose, you know, have basically been pointing out that she's doing all these things as well. So Billie then released a statement where she said, okay, it would be awesome if some people would stop putting words in my mouth and actually read what I said in that Billboard article, which had focused on her efforts to make professional life more ecologically sustainable. I wasn't singling anyone out. These are industry-wide systemic issues. And I agree, that's what the article said.
Yeah.
But Swifties are not having it. They feel targeted, they feel tainted, and they feel justified in coming for Miss Billie Eilish.
Stan culture is sick.
It is. Miriam Margolyes needs to, like, have a word with them. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. It's completely nuts. Like, you know, yes, Taylor does this, but so does, like, Ariana. Like, there are loads of massive artists who do this. Like, she wasn't talking about anyone specifically. And she actually, I think, in that statement said, like, she actually said, I've done it. Like, you know, she's not, she wasn't suggesting that she was perfect. She's changed things to try and be better, is what she's saying. And it's true. Like, at the end of the day, if an artist is bringing out 12 different versions of their album with bonus tracks on them that you can only listen to on the album and never on Spotify, like, that's about money. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, it is.
It's about 100%. Money, and it's about sales, and it's about charting. It's not about artistic endeavor. Like, come on. Like, nobody believes that. And like, the idea, this thing, though, of Stan's, like, coming for anyone who says anything even vaguely against their person is, like, I just find it infuriating.
No, I find it extremely difficult, because it just makes it so hard to enjoy anything authentically, because you feel like as if there's kind of like an agreed, you know, sort of notion of this is how you have to feel about one thing. Mm. And if you don't, then you're kind of opening up for attack.
Yeah.
And you see the way they push people over the edge for even, like, you know, Billie Eilish obviously is like an enormous international superstar and has, like, a team can take care of her and seems like she's fairly unbothered by all of this. But, like, there are times when these groups will turn their gaze on, like, specific individuals or on,
it,
you
happened,
know, on,
to, on, like, it happened to an Irish journalist when she it wasn't even a bad review, but it was like a lukewarm review, something to do with Lady Gaga. And, like, people were coming for her in the most vicious and ableist and, you know, just point blank offensive ways. Like, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah. No, these are, like, I don't know, I think these parasocial relationships, if that's the right word, that people have developed with these enormous stars. Like, there is something that needs to be explored in that, because it's very, very unhealthy. And I don't know if it's part of, like, belonging to the wider group, or whether it's like you feel you've got a direct link to the individual at the center of it, or what it is. And, like, it's so close, because you hear, you know, like, you often hear about kind of, you know, these sort of celebrities that have stalkers that are their information, or they're doxxed online, and it's kind of like it's something that can so quickly flip into danger. And it's the person at the center of it. Like, the reality is that, like, with Taylor Swift, and I don't know, I could be proved wrong here, but every time I have seen this sort of a narrative exist, we were just talking about Lizzo, and I think it's a great example of it, where someone lives in that kind of tidal wave of success. There is always a breaking point, and there is always a massive crash down.
Absolutely.
And you're just waiting for that. So it becomes really uneasy to watch because you're thinking, you know, when is this going to, like, when is this going to start? I mean,
When's the
with
bubble
Taylor
gonna
Swift,
burst? Yeah.
when's the bubble going to burst? But with Taylor Swift as well, like, they're so willing to protect her from, and I think that perhaps because there was an environmental aspect to this and there was all of that concern and issue around Taylor Swift use, private jet use, like, there is this already, this notion of her of being someone who perhaps isn't as focused
Yeah.
on that sort of environmental side of it. But Billie finished it off by saying, "The climate crisis is now, and it's about us being part of the problem or trying to do better." Sheesh. And I love that she finished it with a sheesh.
She's right. She's dead right. Okay, let's finish with this story about Lucy Spraggan and Simon Cowell because this warmed the cockles of my millennial heart.
I don't understand. I mean, I do. I saw it all. Yes, it's very unexpected. This is not the story that you were expecting. I don't. So, X Factor star Lucy Spraggan says Simon Cowell will walk her down the aisle.
So for
So,
people who don't remember, let's just contextualize Lucy Spraggan. Lucy
2012.
Spraggan, yeah, 2012, she was a singer with a guitar. She wrote her own song Last Night. That was why she was like notable that she came on with an original song that wasn't awful and like they actually loved.
Yes. No, exactly. And people would remember she was kind of hotly tipped going into that particular season that she was going to do incredibly well. She was clearly kind of, you know, she was kind of a very new direction for the for the X Factor, and that she was performing her own music midway through that season, though she had to step away years later in her autobiography, which was released last year, or her memoir, Processing, Finding My Way Through, and part of her seventh album. She reveals that during the production of X Factor, she had been raped by a hotel porter, and that she had had to withdraw from the competition for those reasons. Simon Cowell obviously heard about this, released a statement at the time saying what has happened to Lucy was horrific and heartbreaking. Since then, they've connected and they work together, and Simon is supporting her. I think it's really beautiful that Simon Cowell and Rylan have been like the two sort of individuals that have like wrote in to kind of like really kind of like help Lucy at the time and now. And Lucy now has become fast friends with Simon. And this is a very bizarre, I want more context. This one morning, Simon was about to get in the sea, and I said, "Will you give me away?" And he replied, "Yeah." He went off for a swim and came back and said, "I'd absolutely love to. It would be an honor." I'm like, were they swimming together? Did she
Yes.
text him as he was?
Oh, I pre kind of presumed. Yeah, that's actually, I kind of presumed they were together, but who knows? Because she says that she feels like Simon Cowell and his wife, Lauren Silverman, are like her surrogate parents. She says, "I authentically love the guy. I love Lauren. I love their son, Eric. I love Lauren's other son, Adam. We're all great friends. I care about them. They care about me. And Simon really cares about my life, my wellness, and my music. Simon and Lauren feel like surrogate parents. They're always looking out for me." So, like, they obviously, you know, really are
It
close.
is. It's a lovely story. It is so unexpected though, because Simon Cowell is not someone who you kind of would assume has, I was gonna say, the capacity to love.
No, but
Maybe.
you wouldn't think of him as being this like, you know, kind of father figure, you know, long-term person, especially
No.
because Simon and or what's it called, Sharon and Louis were such little bitches about him on a Celebrity Big Brother.
Absolutely.
So this is surprising, and I for one love it. I have always felt like he had a heart.
Yeah, like he never he always like he was doing it for TV, whereas you get the notion with like Louis Walsh that he's like much more out for himself, where, you know,
Oh,
Simon was kind of, yeah. But no, I enjoy it. I like the fact that Simon was about to get in the sea. People have been telling him to do that for years, and he didn't listen.
It's true. It's true. Okay, James, I'm gonna let you go. There was only one more thing we were gonna talk about, but literally the story is just that the Traitors has been signed on to continue until
Yeah.
2030, which is great news if you like the Traitors, and I do.
BBC got onto Airbnb, booked Ardross Castle for the next 10 years, and they
It's
are
all
locked in.
happening. Well, James, thank you so much. That's a good beefy entertainment chat, and I really enjoyed it. James, where can people find you?
They can come over and have a look at whatever it is I'm up to on my Instagram at James_O_Hagan, or come and listen to me and Padraig Wilson McCarthy on Curiosity Radio. We have great, we have a great fun. It's on 12 o'clock Saturdays on Dublin City FM, or you can get us anywhere you want on your favourite podcasting app immediately after that. And we have great queer guests talk about queer culture and all sorts of fun things that are going on.
It's very good. I highly recommend it. Okay, James, thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.